You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, March 23rd, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Interesting program for you today, ladies and gentlemen. We will be giving you some updates on what's happening in Libya. Interesting side note, this sort of small battle between CNN and Fox over which outlet is more manly in covering the Libya conflict. An update on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, also sort of devolving into a fight, like a mud fight. I don't know. It's like five-year-olds, though it's pretty funny. And just one housekeeping note, starting hopefully Friday, and at the very least through much of next week, we will be getting perhaps, if possible, live reports, but certainly updates from a Majority Report listener in Japan, a photojournalist who is heading to the northern part of the country to report back on what's going on up there. And we will give you more information on him and those reports as the week progresses. On the program today, you know, sometimes this happens. And many of you know that I will engage conservatives on Twitter. And sometimes I reach a point where I say, you know, this is counterproductive for me to do this on Twitter. Let's have him on the show. We will have our phone system, I believe, within the next couple of weeks, it looks like. Thanks in no small part to the generosity of our members. And, of course, in a huge part to the brilliance and determination of Kyle. But be that as it may, we don't have the opportunity to take phone calls. I think all of you know how much I love to engage conservatives over the phone. And so we're going to have one on today. Who was challenging me on Twitter on tax policy. He is, his name is John Nolte, and he is the, what is it, the editor of one of the Andrew Breitbart blogs on Hollywood. I can't tell you much more about it. I visited it yesterday for the first time. It's hard to find. The guy didn't have a link on his Twitter account, and it's not... they seem to either talk about William Shatner or then liberals are bad. That's as far as I could tell. I don't even know if the liberals are bad part. I don't understand what the blog is about. But we can ask our guest, and we will talk to him later. But let's go right into this story, which I had mentioned yesterday and didn't get to. Not that one. You don't have to grab the sound. This is coming out of Montana. Absolutely wonderful story. It's coming on the heels. I think I mentioned sometime last week that that for the first time in 10 years, polling now reflects, a poll taken by ABC, that the majority of Americans, 53% in this ABC poll, support gay marriage. And I think that even the Republicans have begun to realize that their anti-gay jihad is not going to help them electorally anymore because younger people are not so bigoted. and are not so afraid of the gay, as it were. Apparently, it turns out you cannot get cooties from gay people. So who knew? But they don't know in Montana. There's actually a bill that has passed the Montana Senate last week that will prohibit municipalities, cities, from enacting any ordinances that they decide to pass that include sexual orientation as a protected class from discrimination. In other words, you have Missoula back in 2010, which apparently is the hotbed of 21st century thought in Montana. 20th century thought, probably, at this point, which passed an ordinance that basically says that lesbian, gay, and bisexual transgender citizens cannot be discriminated on that basis from employment, housing, or other forms, other public, you know, getting loans from banks, whatnot, based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. And the Montana State House wants to actually pass, the Republicans there want to actually pass something that will not allow municipalities to do that. Yes, Dorsey, that look of what the what is exactly...
What are you talking about?
Well, I don't know, sweetie. They're just insane there. And in case you were wondering, it is also still, despite the fact that the state Supreme Court in 1997 and the U.S. Supreme Court in 2003 stated that it's not a crime to be gay, the Montana Legislative Committee killed a bill that would have decriminalized homosexual sex in Montana. I think that was a bill that was trying to reverse the, if it happens on the prairie, it stays on the prairie rule that exists in Montana. So yes, illegal to be gay in Montana. And, if the, Republican, state legislature has its, way, it will be illegal to say that it's not illegal to be gay. In any small town or city in Montana, you have to make sure that it's thoroughly illegal to be gay in Montana. So that's just a, I don't know, that's lovely. And that leads us into some other Republican shenanigans in the states. I've spoken of Governor Paul LePage of Maine, a Tea Partier, who is cutting pensions for all state workers, except for one. There's one state worker that he is protecting from pension being cut. Him. Yes. The governor deserves a real pension. He'll be there for maybe, if he's lucky, for 4 years, if he's not recalled. But other state workers, well, and of course, LePage also cutting taxes for millionaires and billionaires in his state by giving an estate tax exemption, raising it from $1 million to $2 million, allowing 400 of the state's wealthiest estates to escape taxation. At the same time, his tax plan would raise property taxes on middle-class Mainers while, of course, freezing health care funding for working parents because, I mean, come on, get a job, working parents, if you want health care, cutting money for schools, and raising the retirement age for public workers. And of course his Republican legislators want to go even further and just completely get rid of the estate tax. But the other, sort of, well, I don't really know how to.
You are a douchebag.
Governor LePage, because you have ordered the removal. This coming, almost to the day of the anniversary of the Shirtwaist Triangle Factory fire, which we discussed at length with Kevin Baker yesterday. A 36-foot mural depicting Maine's labor history from the lobby of the Department of Labor.
What are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about this governor who, trying to save money, is now going to actually spend money to get rid of a mural that depicts the labor movement in the Department of Labor. Because according to LePage spokesman Dan Demerit, the administration felt the mural and the conference room moniker showed, quote, one-sided decor. Not in keeping with the department's pro-business goals. It's not a joke. The mural was erected just in 2008, following a jury selection by the Maine Arts Commission. Well, that explains it. And a $60,000 federal grant. The 11-panel piece depicts several moments, including the 1937 shoe mill strike in Auburn and Lewiston, Maine. Rosie the Riveter at Bath Ironworks from Maine, and the paper mill worker strike of 1986 in Jay. God, it's poisoning the minds of the people in the Labor Department. So, I presume they'll go and spend, I don't know, another $50,000 to take it down, and put something up that is more pro-business. Like maybe pictures of buildings or I have no idea what. Meanwhile, in Ohio, House Speaker William Batchelor called Governor John Kasich's proposal to completely eliminate the estate tax one of the Republican-controlled legislators' top priorities. And even while finding room for estate tax reduction, Kasich proposed budget cuts, 25% of funding for local schools, $427 million for nursing homes, $1 million for food banks. Come on, folks. Seriously. We all know how many scofflaws and welfare queens they drive around in their Cadillacs and then they just go to the food bank so they can just get free food. Obviously not needed. $12 million from children's hospitals. Well, that will teach kids. You've got to teach them early not to get sick or they'll just keep doing it over and over and over again. And $15.9 million from adoption program for children with special needs. Look, come on. You know, promoting the adoption of kids without special needs. Get a full-fledged kid. Don't get one with special needs. Get one they can go into the fields immediately. Kasich, surprisingly, his favorable numbers and his unfavorable numbers have reversed themselves. And he now a majority a plurality of people find him unfavorable in Ohio. That's pretty impressive. That was quite a short honeymoon for John Kasich. He may want to head back over to his former employers at Fox and get on there with Sean Hannity, see if he can't stir up some support for himself. Meanwhile, in New Jersey, in his 2011 budget proposal, Governor Chris Christie called for raising the state's estate tax exemption from $675,000 to $1 million. This is even while proposing cuts to the state's earned income tax credit and homestead rebates for working poor families. Because tax cuts should go to the wealthiest amongst us. Don't you know? Christie's also got some problems because his school budget cuts were so draconian that a judge appointed, a Superior Court judge appointed by the Supreme Court in New Jersey has found that they're unconstitutional, particularly because they seem to fall on heavily high-risk districts. In other words, poor people. So Governor Christie, who loved to spend his time as a U.S. attorney in the Ritz-Carlton to save the taxpayers' money, most of his cuts, of course, are going to fall on the backs of poor people because they don't contribute as much money to him, presumably. You know, if it's not trust fund babies who make the jobs in this country, then I don't know who it is. It's certainly not those kids with special needs. You know, when was the last time an adopted special needs kid created a job? Okay, sure, maybe for like a social worker here or there. But honestly, folks, Somebody send me an email or an IM. Tell me when the last time a special needs kid who needed to be adopted created a job in this country. And now, when we return, we will have a little debate, I guess. I'm not quite sure how this will work out. But, you know, the show is not always for you people. Sometimes it's for me, too. Today it's for me. Because I think I'm going to have a lot of fun with this, and maybe we'll all learn something about tax policy in this country. When we hear from my new Twitter friend, John Nolte, on his perspective on taxation policy in this country. We'll be right back after this. Hi, folks. You can always support the show and get great coffee, tea, or chocolate by going to justcoffee.coop. Putting the coupon code MAJORITY in the coupon box, get a 10% discount, get some great fair trade coffee. And, of course, the real way that this show is going to be able to continue is if you become a member now. You can do so at majority.fm. You get almost an hour of extra daily show, plus some swag, plus knowing that you're supporting independent media. Thanks. All right, folks, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report, and on our phone, we have John Nolte. He is the editor of the Breitbart's Big Hollywood. Welcome to the program, John.
Thanks for having me on, Sam.
Now, John, just to get everybody up to speed here, I had tweeted out I had retweeted a tweet from one of my listeners, actually, I think it was. Don't Be a Putz is his name. I don't think that's his real name. but that's his. That tends to be his handle. And that was that tweet was I added broken, not broke. Don't be a putz. If rich people paid taxes like they did in 1961, we'd have an extra $382 billion annually. And this was based on 2008 figures, the last figures that we have for taxation in this country. And you responded, "I see you're for raising taxes. Does this include your own?" And then we started a Twitter exchange. So now tell me something. What is your sense? Now, you suggested, what did you mean by that? I mean, you went on to say that I could donate. What, do you think that's the solution there?
Well, I call it the Ed Begley Jr. standard. I mean, I admire Ed Begley Jr. Because when it comes to the environment, when it comes to global warming, he's really the only person I know of, especially in celebrity land. He walks the walk. He lives his life the way that he wants others to live. And I see a lot of people talking about raising taxes, that they want to raise taxes. They want the government to forcibly take people's money away from them. And I think you should live the change you want. I think the place to start, because you can donate money to the U.S. Treasury, is to say, listen, I believe that this country would be better off if people paid more in taxes. So I am voluntarily donating the percentage of money that I think that I should pay to the government. So right now, and I'm not inquiring about your personal finances, but let's say your tax rate right now is 20%, Sam, and you think it should be 35%. I think you would come from a much better place. I think you would be living the change you want if you donated 15% more of your income to the U.S. Treasury.
Right, and you asked me, you said, does this include your own? And I responded, indeed, I'd be happy to pay taxes under Clinton-era rates or 1961 rates or any of the rates from 45 to 1980. Now, but you understand the difference, right, between a donation and taxes. I mean, for instance, do you belong to any clubs? Do you work out, John?
I do, yes.
Okay. Now, I presume you go in there and you have to pay a membership fee. Is that right?
Correct.
Right. Now, so you have no problem with that, right? You have no problem with paying a membership, your dues to that club?
None at all.
Okay. Well, so now, and it's a mandatory thing. Now, of course, it's not the same as taxes because taxes we're obligated to pay, right? I mean, so you understand the difference between paying taxes and donating money to the government. My interest is not in the idea of I think that my extra 15 percentage points or whatever it would be would make a difference, but that our tax policy should be that we are generating this amount of revenue. I mean, surely you can see the difference between that, right?
Well, but I think that what you're asking the government to do is to forcibly take money from people that they've earned, more money.
No, wait a second. So he's like, let's stay right there. Do you have a problem with taxation at all? Do you think that we should pay zero taxes to the government?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Of course not.
Okay, so what we're really talking about is not the idea that the government forcibly takes money, because you agree that, yes, we should have taxes. So really what we're discussing here is the amount of taxes paid, right?
Right. You want the government to forcibly take more money from people than they're already paying now.
Yes, and you want the government to forcibly take how much more, how much money from people?
I would like to go back to the Reagan era taxes with his first tax plan. I think it was in 1981 or 1982.
Well, wait a second. You're aware that our tax rates right now are less than they were under Reagan. You're aware of that, right?
Well, not the top tax rates. Those have gone up. The corporate tax rates have gone up.
Well, wait a second. I happen to have them right here. In 1981, the top marginal tax rate was 50%.
Oh, no, I'm talking about after his tax cuts. I think he lowered that to 23.
No, that was actually George Bush. When he left office, the top marginal tax rate was 28%.
You're talking about Bush or Reagan?
I'm talking about Reagan.
And what's the top tax rate now? 33?
The top marginal tax rate now, excuse me, is, oh, I'm sorry, is 35%. So you want to drop it down to 28%, I see.
Yeah, exactly. I want to go back to the Reagan tax levels.
Okay. And why?
Why that number?
Why do you think that number is a successful number?
Well, if you look at what happened during, you know, what's known as the Reagan Revolution, we had from 1981 to about 2007, we had 26 years. We had two shallow recessions, you know, one when the first President Bush left office and one when Clinton left office. But we had 27 years of unprecedented prosperity during that time. And also, and this is what I think the left should understand.
But we only had 3 years from 88 to 90 where it was at 28%. Prior to that, in 87, it was 38.5. Prior to that, it was 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 69, and 70 under Reagan. So there was 3 years. And so are you suggesting that those 3 years, which then was followed by a recession, somehow brought us some type of economic miracle?
Yeah, not only that, and this is something that I think the left should understand, Sam, is that when Reagan took office and when Reagan left office, even though he lowered taxes, the Treasury revenues doubled. And that's because I don't believe that taxes, the tax increases, increase revenues. I think a booming economy increases revenues. So if you lower taxes and you double tax revenues, and that's what Reagan did. When he left office, revenues were doubled. What was coming into the Treasury was doubled because the economy was doing so good. That is the way to increase revenues.
Did the economy perform better under Clinton?
I don't believe so.
Well,
no,
I think
but
it
I
did
do,
actually. But now,
but I do. But I credit the Reagan Revolution. I credit the Reagan Revolution.
So you're telling me you credit those 3 years out of the 20 years from 1980 to 2000, you credit those 3 years for the entire period of growth?
Yeah, I credit Reagan's economic plan, the tax decreases, the deregulation.
Well, we're not talking about deregulation for a moment.
25-year boom.
We're talking about, okay, so for 3 years when the tax rate was low, that basically provided a boom prior to the decreases and after. All right, I don't know how that would work in retrospect, but under Clinton, he raised it back up to almost 40%. And I think people would argue that you'd find that our economy grew significantly more during those years. But let me suggest this to you. We're in a time period. We're in a period now. And as soon as Bush got into office, he lowered that tax rate. We're at a time where we have an all-time low of 60 years, even during the Reagan era, even during those 3 years, where we have tax revenues as a share of GDP. Not a function of the recession. They're at an all-time low in the past 60 years. Now, we had amazing economic growth in the 60s, in the 50s, and had, 80s. Obviously, oil shocks in the 70s, which were very problematic. But we're in an all-time low here in terms of taxes. And we have a serious, serious deficit. Now, I'm not as worried about it as some, but... Wouldn't you agree that we need more revenue?
I'm all for more revenue, but I'm not for more revenue by taking away people's economic freedom. And I disagree with the fact that you can raise taxes.
But wait a second. Why does 23% or 28% under Reagan? Why does 28% take away? I mean. Isn't freedom something that can you have like half freedom? Can you have, you say, so like, well, how much freedom do you have at 28% as opposed to, let's say, 27%? I mean, because if you're talking about freedom, don't you want 100% freedom? Shouldn't there be no taxes?
Well,
because what we're talking about here is what's the most effective taxes to deal with the needs of our society? And clearly,
right.
We need more money. And clearly, we are at the lowest amount of taxes being paid in this country in 60 years.
But you're blaming the lowest amount of taxes as percentage of GDP. You're blaming that on tax rates. I'm blaming that on an awful, awful economic situation.
No. But GDP reflects the economic situation. So
well,
it booms, we have this is a relationship. It's a relationship between the amount of revenue we get with taxes and the size of the economy and the success of the economy. So, in other words, when we're in a recession, GDP goes down. When we're in booming times, GDP goes up. So that has nothing to do with the quality of the – we're at an all-time low relative to the GDP.
Okay, that's a very good point. But you are under the belief that raising taxes is raising revenues.
I believe that if you give me more revenue, I will have more revenue.
But I believe that the way to give you more revenue is through a booming economy. Because if you're taxing 35% of less money, because
but it doesn't matter how much the economy booms if we're
it
at
depends
an
on how much money
you're making. Low, John.
How much money are you
John,
making as an individual or as a wealthy person?
It doesn't matter.
If you're taxing 35%. Of $1 million, you're going to get 35% of $1 million. If the economy is booming and you're taxing 23% of $5 million, you're going to get more revenues.
That's right. But you understand that the relationship between those two, the relationship between the booming economy and the amount of taxes we are at an all-time low in 60 years. So it has nothing to do with what's going on.
I do understand that, but what I'm telling you is that the more money people make, the more taxes they pay, and the way to get them to make more money is to decrease taxes so that the economy gets better. You don't want to focus on taxes. You want to focus on the economy. And if you raise taxes during a recession, which we're still in, you're going to hurt the economy and decrease revenues. There's a reason why Reagan slashed taxes and we doubled Treasury revenues, and that's because the economy exploded.
What year did we double these Treasury revenues?
If you look at 1981 to 1989,
Listen carefully to what I'm suggesting to you, because I'm not even suggesting it to you. I'm pointing it out to you that taxes between 81 and 87 were higher than they are now. The top marginal rates were significantly higher. There was only 3 years where it was lower than they are now. And that was 88 to 89 and 90. You're looking at the top bracket.
Reagan slashed taxes across the board. He slashed taxes for everyone, not just the wealthy.
Well, actually, wage earners went up. In 82, you'll find that we raised the payroll taxes. But listen, so you're basing this on somehow his taxes retroactively helped his economy. And
those tax decreases got us out of one of the worst recessions we've ever been in. That's what got us out of it. I mean, if you compare what Obama did to what Reagan did.
Well, Obama has not raised a single tax at all.
No, he's not. But
we're paying much less taxes.
$1 trillion. He spent $1 trillion. And look at where we're at now. I mean, are things getting better?
Well, things are much less than they were. Well, listen.
But look at what Reagan did.
We can talk about the stimulus, because every economist out there says that the stimulus actually saved jobs. It didn't. It wasn't large enough. I would agree with that. But the bottom line is, let's stop with this notion. Let's go back for a moment, and we're going to run out of time here in a minute. But let's just go back with the original notion. You do see the difference between taxation and donation, right? You do see the difference. It's not the
same. What I believe is that if you're going to ask the government to forcibly do something, that you should volunteer to do that first. So I think that people that
it
are
won't
running
have
around
make a
and
difference.
Saying.
We, I can assure you, but not only based upon my income, but beyond that, it's not the same thing. You do understand there's a difference between one person donating money and tax policy.
But I understand that. But I also
Do you understand that though, right?
I do understand that, but okay, I also
so you're
understand
just
the concept.
You're just being cute about the whole thing.
No, I think
you can argue that. Look,
you
can argue this.
You can talk over me, so I can't make my point. But
right,
I like
now, let me finish. You can argue that that lower taxes brings a better economy. Now, we didn't see that with George Bush. He lowered taxes significantly. The economy did not boom. We didn't create as many jobs as we did under Clinton.
George Bush got us out of a recession.
We didn't create as many jobs as we did out of.
But he did get us out of a recession.
What? Which recession is that?
The recession that he inherited. We were in a recession when George Bush took over. We've been in two shallow recessions since the Reagan Revolution. George Bush got us out of a recession when he took over.
What year did this
economy,
recession start?
What was it, 2001, 2002?
That was okay. Now look, we had a stock market crash. George Bush got us out of this shallow recession, and then
the following six years,
he created not even a fraction of the jobs that were created during the Clinton administration. The wages were completely stagnant for workers. The only thing that happened is we created a tremendous amount of income disparity in this country, and it would also led into a massive recession that started in 2007. So, you know, I don't know where you're getting your figures from, but you think
the lowering of taxes created the recession of 2007?
I don't know if the lowering of taxes created the recession, but I do know that the lowering of taxes did not help the economy.
That's absurd. Of course it did. You look at Clinton. I mean, Bush inherited a recession. He lowered taxes. We got out of the recession. I mean, that's just a fact.
And then we fell back into another one 4 years later.
Well, that wasn't because of lowering taxes. That was because of toxic mortgages created by the government through Fannie and Freddie.
Oh my God! You've got all the talking points down there. All right. Well, listen. So taxes lowering taxes really doesn't help the economy. I mean, that just it didn't.
Of course, it helps the economy. You give people more money. They spend it in the economy.
We have
they
corporations
jobs.
That have $2 trillion. They're sitting on $2 trillion of capital, and they're not creating any jobs.
Yeah, and the reason they're sitting on that money is because right now we live in an unsure economy. Our tax base right now is so politicized. They have no idea what
so
the
economy. So
now
it's a lack of it's a lack of security. They're not sure that their taxes are going to stay this low for the next couple of years. Do you think there's
That's
any
exactly
chance
right.
of the taxes going up?
What are the chances of taxes going up?
No.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. I hope they're zero. I hope we can say to the job creators in this country, this is what the economy is going to look like over the next 10 years,
When has there ever been a time where we could say that to job creators in this country? Who had the crystal ball?
When you have a stable environment.
Let me ask you this. When was there a time when there was more security? Because I can look at my top marginal income tax rates from 1913 to 2003, and I'll tell you, the most stability in tax rates came from 1939, when tax rates were at 79% for the highest earners, all the way up to 1981. That was the longest time of security. So maybe it's not a question of lowering taxes. Maybe if we finally decide that we're going to raise taxes back to the levels they were for the greater part of the 20th century, and we say we're going to stick with these, then the economy is going to boom.
Well, let me go back to my original point. The idea that right now we have 2 years of tax decreases and we have Obamacare. And right now businesses are sitting on $2 trillion because they have no idea what Obamacare is going to do to them, and they have no idea what the tax structure is going to look like. So we need to create an environment, a stable environment, where businesses can say, okay, I can invest now.
But
right
so,
now,
so
they
it's
don't
about
know
stability. Well, so you would support maybe a law that some type of stipulation that said we're going to raise taxes back to the 1961 top marginal rates. We're going to keep them there for 20 years, and everyone knows.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Raising
taxes.
Well,
listen. Let's.
I am morally and economically opposed.
Why do you think rich people shouldn't pay? What do millionaires do with their individual income taxes? As opposed to corporate taxes, we pay corporate taxes just like every other country, major industrialized country. Our taxes are extremely in line with most other countries. But leave that for a moment. What would happen if millionaires actually paid the same percentage of their income as they did over the better part of the 1950s?
Well, if you
would
look
it sink our recession? Why didn't it? Would it sink our economy? Why didn't it do it during 1960s? Or 50s.
Right. If you look at the stimulus is a perfect example.
Well, no. Just answer that question.
No, I want to answer your question, but let me just do a little backfilling here. The stimulus is a perfect example. The government took $1 trillion from us.
No, wait, no. Government, 40% of that $800 billion was tax cuts.
Okay, so but the government took a ton of money from us.
Took $400 billion.
$400 billion from us. And did no good with it whatsoever as far as growing the economy. You let people keep their own money.
There's not a single economist who would agree with that. I mean, can you state anybody aside from like a commentator, but can you state any economic analysis that suggests that? Because we've seen from the CBO, we've seen from independent economic think tanks that, yes, it saved jobs. It allowed jobs that saved otherwise jobs.
I mean, yeah. that's such a phony. It saved jobs. I mean, what is that? I mean,
I'll explain to you what it is.
It kept the
economy from falling into a depression.
You're creating
which
a false equivalent.
Jobs.
It wasn't an either or proposition.
You don't know what the idea of save jobs means?
What I'm saying is that you're saying it like that.
Let me give you an example of what it means to save jobs.
But you have to let me talk.
Let me just give you an example of what save jobs is, because if you really genuinely don't know what that means, I'll explain it to you.
I do know what it means. I just said I know what it means.
Oh, okay.
My point is this, though. You're creating a false equivalent. You're saying we could either do nothing or spend a ton of money. And my point is that that's not the choice. We could have done something else to get us out of this situation.
What would be that?
And that would be to lower taxes.
Well, we cut taxes 40%. We cut taxes by $400 billion.
Yeah, what I'm talking about is the corporate tax rate. I'm not talking about, I mean, the taxes that were cut were not, if you're going to cut taxes, you got to cut tax rates. You got to cut the actual percentage that comes out of people's money. And you got to cut the corporate tax rate.
So it's not dollars. It doesn't matter how many dollars come out.
Yeah, because that just gets too messy. Again, you want to look for stability. You want to look for stability in the economy so that people are sitting on all that money.
So
and I agree with you.
So it's not a matter of how much people are taxing. It's just we're back to stability again. And like I suggest to you,
it's
that
both.
We had 20 years, 30 years, 40 years of stability with millionaires paying their fair share of taxes, and our economy was in great shape.
You're saying our economy was in great shape? In 1939, and that there was no recessions between, I mean, do you remember the 70s?
I do remember the 70s. I was actually talking about from 1950 to 1970. It was a good 20 years. I mean, obviously,
but do you know who else cut marginal tax rates to get out of a recession? Do you know who else? Do you know who Reagan got the idea from to cut marginal tax rates to end a recession? He got that from John F. Kennedy.
Right. John F. Kennedy took the top marginal tax rates from 91% to 77%.
Right.
Right.
And then Reagan took them down further?
Reagan took them down to 50% and then down to 28% by the time he left.
And he doubled tax revenues.
Well, that's not true.
He doubled the treasury. That's an absolute fact.
No, it's not.
I'm not lying to you. I wouldn't make up a number. I don't think you're lying to me with your numbers. So, I mean, let's not go there. But I'm telling you that when Reagan took office and when he left office, revenues doubled.
Well, yes, the economy grew to a certain extent, but that's not
exactly
a function of Listen, you and I are on the phone and it's raining outside, but I don't necessarily know there's a causal connection there. But be that as it may, John, I appreciate your time here. It was interesting to explore your perspective on this.
Yeah, I was gracious of you to ask me on, Sam. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for joining us. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back. I got a couple more news stories. Not a specific race, but millionaires create jobs. And Reagan doubled tax revenues. All the while, there were huge deficits during Reagan's tenure. I think it was Dick Cheney who said deficits don't matter. Reagan did not do it. It all makes perfect sense to me now. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Call the National Guard. Let's get it popping. What happens in Wisconsin? Don't stay in Wisconsin. Mr. President, 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 you're wrong. This is a national issue. Mr. President, 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 you're wrong. This is a national issue. Fox News is a cancer. Why love chemo? They all wrong. Neocon, the new emo. Tax cuts pass, benefits on veto. Now we in Madison like F.U. CeeLo. All right, that was fun for me. I haven't had an opportunity to do that in a while. And that song is Awkward, featuring Why Love. I don't know anything more about that song. Somebody tweeted it to me. So let's pick up where we were in Libya. A U.S. rescue chopper unfortunately shoots six Libyan villagers as they were welcoming the pilots of the downed jet, the U.S. Air Force jet. Now, fortunately, these six people were not killed. One child may have to have a leg amputated because of the bullet wound. It's just, you know, one of the costs that's involved is civilians will always get hurt in these situations. And as the weeks go on and probably the months and perhaps the years of our involvement in Libya, who knows, maybe it will be less. We will discuss the merits of going in. Certainly these people were happy to see American military personnel, at least according to the Daily Mail in Britain, which, you know, who knows. But Britain has been involved in Tomahawk cruise missile attack on Gaddafi's presidential compound. The fighting continues there, and it's pretty ugly. Meanwhile, I promised this to you yesterday. I played it for people in the members only section. Here is Nick Robertson responding to Fox News, claiming that he was used as a human shield, and other reporters were used as a human shield by the Libyan government, in a Gaddafi-sponsored tour of certain areas. Here it is.
Wolf, this allegation is outrageous and it's absolutely hypocritical. You know, when you come to somewhere like Libya, you expect lies and deceit from a dictatorship here. You don't expect it from the other journalists. Why do I say that? Because Fox News has said that they didn't send somebody on this trip last night because they said it was a quote-unquote propaganda trip. They sent a member of their team. He was non-editorial. He was non-technical, not normally a cameraman. He was given a camera by the team and told to come out and come on the bus with the 40 other journalists who were there, who were free to get on the bus, free to get off the bus when they wanted. Told us when he was on the bus that even he, this member of the Fox team, was surprised that the correspondent and the normal cameraman weren't coming out, that he was being sent. This isn't his normal job, that he was being sent. So that's why I say what Fox is saying is outrageous and hypocritical. And the idea that we were some kind of human shields is nuts. I mean, if they had actually been there, Steve Harrigan, the correspondent here, is somebody I've known for many years. I see him more times at breakfast than I see him out on trips with government officials here. Other correspondents here who go out regularly say the same things. NBC, CBS, all the other news teams here go out, not on all the government trips. We didn't go out on another one yesterday. But we very, very rarely see the Fox News team out on the trip. So for them to say and call this, to say they didn't go, and for them to call this and say this was government propaganda to hold us there as human shields, when they didn't even leave the hotel, the correspondent didn't leave the hotel and go and see for himself, is ridiculous. We were taken there. We went in through the security. We filmed the building. We were given 15, 20 minutes to do that, 5 minutes at Gaddafi's tent, and then we were taken out. And I was literally physically pushed back on the bus when we left. That's how quickly the government officials wanted to get us out. If I sound angry, it is because I am. As I say, I expect lies from the government here. I don't expect it from other journalists. And it's frankly incredibly disappointing to me, Wolf.
Now, to be fair to Robertson, the reason why he probably doesn't expect lies from Fox journalists is that he's been covering things in other countries and maybe he hasn't had the opportunity to actually watch Fox. Maybe that's, to be fair to Nick Robertson. Meanwhile, the Fox News reporter having his manhood. Did we get to the part where this guy never goes out of the, sees him in breakfast?
No.
Okay, there's a whole other part of that where Nick Robertson says, like, I see this guy more in the hotel than I see him anywhere else. I see him every day at breakfast, and that's it. He stays in his hotel room. And so this guy, having his basically his manhood questioned, because Robertson went on to say, like, I see journalists from ABC, NBC, from around the world. They're all out and they're, about in the war zone. I never see that guy outside the hotel. So the guy, Steve Harrigan, shoots back with, he puts on his blue blazer. This is an interview with the Huffington Post. He puts on his blue blazer and gets on the government bus and then pats himself on the back and calls that news. Bullshit. somebody's ego is hurt here. This is the first time I've been attacked, he said. Robertson is in the same hotel as me. A man could come down and say, hey, what's up? Instead of saying I'm lazy, that I'm a liar, and that I'm as bad as Gaddafi. Because apparently they took the security guy and put him on the bus and asked him to operate the camera for Fox while the reporter stayed in the hotel. And Harrigan responded to the laziness charge by noting that he's required to be on air more frequently than his colleagues. I can stand outside my balcony and report what I see, he said. I can talk to people about what they see. But for someone to say I'm lazy doesn't know me, who's not in our working condition, who doesn't know our schedule. The guy has a screw loose. In other words, you don't have any idea how much time I got to spend in that goddamn makeup chair. All right? It's difficult. He also called his Nick Robertson dull. I got to get my hair done. I got to get makeup on. I got to do this multiple times a day. Do you have any idea what it does to my complexion to have that much makeup coming on and off, on and off? The razor burn alone. The razor burn alone. Let me get to this story about the Wisconsin Supreme Court, because this is also a funny, catty fight. Look, there's a big, big election happening April 4th in Wisconsin. This is for control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. We're going to see a lot we already know there's a stay on Governor Walker's law to destroy unions because of a procedural matter, because they broke the open meeting laws in preparing this bill in the last go-through. This case could very well make it up to the Supreme Court. Other cases on the constitutionality in terms of like home rule, whether or not the municipalities can be overruled and how they will deal with collective bargaining will be up, probably be challenged. There'll be other legal challenges as they go forward. So the control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court is very important. We've discussed this in the past. It is now 4-3 in Republican hands. This is an elected position. And the guy up for re-election turns out to be a real, real rude mofo.
You are a douchebag.
Apparently, this guy, Prosser, this was, as the deeply divided state Supreme Court wrestled over whether to force one member off of criminal cases last year, Justice David Prosser exploded at fellow Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson behind closed doors, calling her a bitch and threatening to destroy her. This is what we call judicial temperament. And in Wisconsin, of all places, people there were so nice. It was disturbing. The incident, revealed in interviews as well as emails between justices, shows fracture on the court run even deeper than had been revealed in public sniping in public years. Problems got so bad that justices on both sides described the court as dysfunctional, and Prosser and others suggested bringing in a third party for help. I guess maybe like a therapist. Prosser acknowledged the incident recently. He thought it was becoming public now in an attempt to hurt him politically. I don't doubt it. That's what happens in political races. He said the outburst came after Abrahamson took steps to undermine him politically and to embarrass him and other court conservatives. In the context of this, I said, quote, yes, you are a total bitch, Prosser said. I probably overacted, but I think it was entirely warranted. In other words, I did call her a bitch, but she deserved it. They are masters at deliberately goading people into incautious statements. This is bullying and abuse of very, very long standing. So this guy's complaining that he was bullied into calling her a bitch. Fascinating. Fascinating. The guy has temper tantrums. And this came out in a debate, I guess, last night. It's an April 5th Wisconsin State Supreme Court election. There was a debate they met on Monday for a debate between Prosser and the Assistant Attorney General, Joanne Kloppenburg. And as far as I know, Prosser has not called her a bitch. In response to a question, this is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, from a question of the former Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Geske about what he would do to boost collegiality on the Supreme Court, Prosser said getting reelected to another 10-year term would lessen the animosity among the deeply divided court. Some people in the court don't want me elected. So presumably if he gets elected, it will lessen the animosity. Kloppenburg said it would be difficult for the Supreme Court to come together if Prosser was reelected because he has publicly castigated other justices. Losing your temper does not solve problems, Kloppenburg said. Prosser attacked, this is the, Prosser then attacked Kloppenburg for comments that her fans on her campaign Facebook account had posted there attacking him. So he's complaining about the Facebook fans attacking him. It says, stop the turd. Vote Kloppenburg. He said, am I the turd or is the governor the turd? Man, this guy's pissed because people said, stop the turd, vote Kloppenburg. I want to know, am I the turd? All I can say to you, Supreme Court Justice Kloppenburg, excuse me, wait a second. Oh, vote Kloppenburg. No. All I can say to you, Supreme Court Justice Prosser, he who denies it supplies it. So, folks, good thing her name wasn't Kloppen Bit, or it could have been Stop the... All right, folks, catch you on the flip side. Hope you enjoy. I hope that debate wasn't too annoying for you. I know it was a little bit difficult to sort of... There's a lot of dancing. A lot of dancing around. It's about taxes. It's about confidence and stability. It's about revenues going up, even though tax reform also involved. You know, JFK... one of the things JFK did was, yes, he lowered the marginal tax rates and closed all the loopholes to simplify the tax code. So in other words, more money came in. But more money isn't more money. More revenue isn't more tax revenue. You can cut taxes for $400 billion worth of taxes, but that's not going to create jobs unless the rates go down. There you have it.
Good times. That was fun.
I thought I enjoyed it. All right, we'll go to the IMs. You can IM me at Majority FM. On the flip side, next week on the show, we will be welcoming Jeremy Scahill. Later in this week, we will be welcoming Andy Kindler. I'm not sure who we have lined up tomorrow, but I'm sure it'll be an enjoyable show. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, end of this week and through next week, we'll have hopefully live reports, but at least firsthand accounts of what's going on in northern Japan. And talk to you tomorrow.